Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning health briefing. And with us today, the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern's Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Thomas Moran. Doctor, good morning. Let's talk about aspirin first. This new study that came out once again paints aspirin as a wonder drug, doesn't it?
Yeah, good morning, Bob. The study shows really the use of regular use of aspirin, which is considered to be two regular strength tablets or six low-dose tablets in a week, did decrease the overall incidence of developing colon cancer. But really what it was looking at is those individuals that are in have a higher risk for colon cancer, you know, lifestyle, diet, no exercise, increasing alcohol, smoking, all the things that we typically talk about that affect your health. Those individuals benefited more from taking the daily dose of aspirin than those that have a healthier lifestyle. Because with any medication therapy that you have, you have to weigh the risk and the benefit. Taking aspirin every day can have some increased risk of having some gastrointestinal bleeding on some individuals. So it's really a discussion with your doctor of your risk profile that you have to look at, is it beneficial or not for you to take aspirin to decrease your overall risk for colon cancer?
Are you still recommending aspirin as far as heart patients are concerned, or people who are susceptible or prone to having heart problems?
Yeah, for certain individuals with cardiovascular disease that had procedures, they are on aspirin therapy, but there's also other medications that cardiologists put you on. And each individual therapy that you go through is going to be kind of tailored to you and your conditions that you have to best suit your needs and your health going forward.
So the caveat here is you could end up with stomach problems by taking too much aspirin. Is that right?
It can happen. Not only aspirin, people think that they read an article and see a study that comes out and it's like, this is going to be the cure-all for everything. But in your situation, it's really what your profile is like to determine if this is the best therapy for you. If you have a low risk of developing colon cancer, you eat healthy, exercise, you don't smoke, you limit your alcohol, and you don't really have family history of colon cancer and get screened, you might not be someone that you're going to take aspirin for to decrease your risk, because you might increase your risk of having gastrointestinal bleeding. And that's the risk benefit that you have to look at and really discuss with your doctor what's the best therapy for you.
Right. Let's talk about the wonder drugs, the weight loss drugs that are out there now. And these blockbuster medications are helping a lot of people. However, there's an interesting report now about how they may trigger eating disorders in some patients. Explain this.
Yeah, so the weight loss drugs, you know, Wegovy and Mounjaro, the GLP-1 drugs that are mimicking hormones that our bodies reproduce to really look at curbing your hunger and regulating your sugar. When you say a lot of people are on them, there's a lot of people, like over 30 million people are taking these drugs. And now what we're finding, because of the number and volume that is on the medication, there are some that are individuals that are prone to have some eating disorders. And these eating disorders can be into the anorexia, where you don't eat. So you're curbing your appetite because of the drug, you're losing weight, and now you're going into the realm of a illness where you're really not eating at all, and you're going into the unhealthy weight category where you're losing too much weight. So when you look at who goes on the drug, there's some screening that you go through of seeing what your profile is. Do you have any tendencies towards eating disorders? Meaning, have you overeaten? Have you really restricted yourself? Do you seesaw back and forth? Do you have any tendencies that we need to look out for if we place you on this medication and monitor you? So there's going to need to be more studies as we go forward with this, because it is early on with this volume of people that are coming. Originally, these drugs were developed for diabetes, and it's shown the benefit of weight loss. And now we have many individuals that are taking the drug or getting prescribed a drug And now we even have online, medication that you could get to get the drug with an online visit. I think we have to be very careful of making sure that we're putting the right people on it. We're screening them beforehand to make sure they have no tendencies to have any eating disorders and monitor them going forward. But it is benefiting many, many people for weight loss.
Yeah, you mentioned diabetes, and people have been on these drugs for diabetes for quite a while. Is it just that the effects or side effects haven't been studied as much as they are now because so many people are on these drugs now?
You know, we're now getting people that you're not getting placed on it for diabetes management. You're getting placed on it for weight loss management. So there is it's a different profile of patients that are getting placed on this. And some of these patients, when you think of their mental health of what they've been trying to do for years, they've been trying to lose weight. And some of them are binge eaters to begin with, or some of them have been restricted eating in Seesaw. And this medication sometimes almost unmask those eating disorders or exacerbates them once they get placed on this medication. And that's what some of the psychiatrists and psychologists have been seeing, mm-hmm. with an increase in the number of people presenting to their practices with some eating disorders. But more study is going to need to be done to see if this is truly a side effect, or are we unmasking already disorders that are in individuals, and now we're unmasking them because they're on this drug.
You mentioned this class of drugs, GLP-1. Ozempic is one of them, I guess. Are all of these drugs basically the same? They have different names, but are they the same?
Right, different names, but all GLP-1 drugs, which is the name of it, it's really a glucagon-like peptide 1, which mimics a hormone that the body releases that helps us curb our appetite. So when we eat, our gut releases a hormone that tells us we're getting full, and it kind of curbs our appetite. This drug mimics that, so we don't feel the urge to eat. That's how the drug actually ends up working.
Mm-hmm. Continuing with Dr. Thomas Moran, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. The American Academy of Pediatrics issued a report. Kids are breaking down and burning out from the professionalization of youth sports, a trend with long-term health consequences, they say. What's this all about, Doctor?
So we have had a change in the way sports and children has gone over the years. We used to go by the seasons. So kids used to, play baseball in the spring and the summer, switch to football or hockey in the winter, or indoor sports like volleyball, then switch back again. They were constantly changing their use of their muscles and their bodies as they went through. Right now, we're almost making children into professional athletes, into one focus 365 days a year, and they're developing overuse injuries because they're using the same activities, same motion, same exercises continuously without a break. And when you use something over and over and over and over and trying to perform at a high level, you have more chance of an overuse injury. And right now, probably 50% of all the injuries that are seen musculoskeletal-wise for children are overuse injuries. It's just because of the repetition, and they don't have a break. Mm-hmm. So what they're really looking at is, how do you give yourself a little bit of time off? And time off means you really take a break even during the week to give your body a chance to rest. And then sometimes in between to take several weeks off to give your muscles and your joints and your tendons the ability to recover without ending up with an injury.
Yeah, so the best defense against overuse injuries, take time off. I hope we're getting this message to coaches so our kids are taken care of, I hope.
It's a tough one for them because they're all, everybody is trying as hard as possible to be the best they can be, but we're driven at an early age thinking you're a professional and you've developed, and we really haven't developed our bodies correctly yet and given a time, and they need breaks. And I think the good coaches that are out there are really looking at the day off, the monitoring, and saying, hey, you know what, you're performing higher than you should be and you need a break and a rest. That's what makes them develop better as athletes and keeps them healthy without injury.
Are you surprised at this number in the study? Overuse injuries account for more than 50% of medical visits by young athletes. Is that your experience?
I've been in the emergency medicine since 1995, and the change in the intensity and the commitment from the athletes, it's not a seasonal thing anymore. Even in the off season, they're practicing and you're seeing these injuries come in because they're trying to be at top level 100% of the time, and that training intensity is what creates injury. Just think of adults too. I mean, you know, singular professional athletes end up with injuries, right? You know, pitchers with elbow injuries, gymnastics with wrists and ankle injuries, runners with plantar fasciitis. I mean, you could go on and on. Golfers, you know, with golfer's elbow that they could get, or back pain. Anything that you do in a repetitive nature without a break, things do break down.
Yeah, and I guess for adults, the message here would be do cross-training, just mix up what you do in your workouts, right?
Exactly.
There's some research on exercise that's pretty interesting, and once again, the message is clear. They did this study on more than 6,000 people, and now these were people with diabetes, and what did they find here as far as when these people exercised, or the difference in people who exercised a lot and folks who did very little?
Yeah, it's very interesting. We have a lot of individuals who sit for 8 hours of the day. Those individuals that sit for 8 hours a day and really have no exercise, where they're not getting any activity during the week, have a 77% increase of a risk of dying early. Take those same individuals still sitting, or, you know, that's their job, that they're sitting at a desk, but add in about 140 minutes to 150 minutes of exercise a week, they decrease their risk of dying early down to 20%. Exercise is important in everything that we do. I mean, all our conversations that we had kind of comes back to keep your body moving, eat healthy, maintain a good activity level, and it really extends your health span. Everybody thinks of your lifespan, how long you live. What we really want to look at is how long do you live healthy? Because being active, being able to do the things that bring you joy, is more of a healthier span of life than just saying, you know, how long can I possibly live? It's how long can I live healthy?
Yeah.
And I think the earlier we start with that and get into routines of, you know, moderation in pretty much everything we do and adding exercise into it, we can live much healthier lifestyles without having to take medication or be treated for conditions that come forward. You know, we have to take some ownership as individuals of what we can control for ourselves, and it is limit alcohol, don't smoke, exercise, and eat as healthy as you can, and you're doing the best you can for your body.
I really like that health span. And we should make clear here, when we talk about sitting, it's not just sitting that's the problem. It's that you're not moving. That's it, right?
Right, exactly. If you, you know, I work and I'm in meetings. I am standing pretty much 8 to 10 hours a day. Mm-hmm. I walk throughout the hospital. I try not to sit at all. I almost get anxious sitting. So it's like a little bit of activity. What you can do on a regular basis, if you do sit, get up, take a break, walk around for 5 minutes. Do something that kind of brings some activity to your body. You'll feel better throughout the day.
Dr. Thomas Moran, can you tell I just stood up, doctor? I'm taking your advice immediately. Thank you. Have a good week.
You have a great week, too. Take care, Bob.